GoDaddy.com. Use the code PODSAVE, that's PODSAVE 139, for $5 off of orders that are $30 or more. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1146, August 29, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from North Brunswick, New Jersey. There, that truck started up. I've been busy, actually, the past day or two. I unloaded, let me think if I can get the days right. Thursday turned out to be kind of Thursday afternoon when I got unloaded at Lewiston, Maine. And then they sent a load that picked up at Skowhegan, Maine, that delivered to North Brunswick, New Jersey this evening. And so I picked the load up early yesterday evening at Skowhegan, Maine, and then I ended up stopping. I guess it was around 8:30 last night or so. Ended up stopping at one of the service plazas along the main turnpike. I guess it was West Kennebunk. One of the, there's actually two service plazas, one on the northbound side and one on the southbound side. So I ended up, that's where I ended up stopping at, and I was tired, and so I, kind of unlike me, I, not long after I stopped, I went to bed. And so I got to bed probably about 9 p.m., and then I think I woke up around 2:30 a.m. for a while. So I happen to have a book here, so I grabbed the book and I started reading a few pages, and then I got sleepy again, so I put the book back up and turned the light off and went back to sleep, and then woke up the next time. I guess it was around 9 o'clock this morning. So got up, got underway, and got headed towards New Jersey, and turned out to be kind of a lengthy trip. Once I made it to Connecticut, then it turned out to be kind of like stopping, or the traffic never actually did really stop, but of course it was kind of heavy, and you had a lot of people, the rush hour type traffic. So but anyway, I ended up making it to here to North Brunswick, New Jersey at, it was around 7 p.m. or Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And so I was able to get back into the dock pretty quickly, and then they took them a while, but they finally got it unloaded. It was big rolls of paper. They had 14... large rolls of paper, and so and I think this place where, and fortunately afterwards, that this place where I unloaded at, it's some sort of a probably like a printer type thing. I think they print junk mail here, is what I kind of direct mail marketing type stuff, catalogs, you know, possibly junk mail type stuff. But anyway, they've got a large parking lot, and so I'm able to I'm able to park here for the evening. And the dispatcher sent a message saying that there were, you know, he didn't have any loads available right now, so it would probably be tomorrow. So we'll, you know, I'm spending the night right here. This is about probably 40 miles or so south of New York City, there, you know, but it's in New Jersey. So anyhow, you know, last night I ended up really sleeping. You know, I was I guess I was more tired than what I thought, because I, you know, as I say, I went to bed probably around 9 o'clock, and then ended up sleeping until, apart from waking up there for about 30 minutes and reading for a while, ended up sleeping probably for about 12 hours. So then after I did get moving today, I had to, you know, pretty much had to go, because I had to get through that traffic. So that's how the day went. I've got some news stories, and you know, I don't know, things are kind of going, you know, I've been expecting, you know, I think I was talking in the book, maybe in the last podcast, you know, the Obama and the Democrats are going to try to, they're going to call it fairness or whatever they call it. They're going to try to get rid of any opposition. They don't want criticism. Communists basically don't like to be criticized. Totalitarian governments don't like to be criticized. Dictators don't like to be criticized. So they're going to try to kind of come in through the back door into the broadcast business and eliminate, if they can, they'll try to eliminate people like Rush Limbaugh, any kind of conservative talk radio. They're going to try to eliminate that, get rid of it, make it impossible to, you know, so it can't happen. And then you'll just, you know, because they don't want to be criticized, you know, and they think, oh, well, it's not fair because there's no liberal talk radio. Well, the reason there isn't, I can tell you why. You know, liberalism doesn't work as a, you know, generally, you know, the reason there are no liberals on talk radio, and there's no such thing really as liberal talk radio, is because liberals really don't, they can't argue. They don't really have any arguments. It's all based on emotion. There's no substance, and so therefore they cannot really make valid arguments. All it is it's based around emotion and getting upset and feelings, and that doesn't work very well for, you know, it doesn't make good radio, and it certainly doesn't sell things. And that, you know, so you know, therefore it can't support itself, and that's why liberalism just won't work, as, you know, on talk radio. It can't compete. So but they're going to try that. But then there's another thing here. There's another aspect to it. Oh, you know, the internet is also a big problem, because there's a lot of free speech that goes on the internet. And I really think that, you know, they'll go after that too if they possibly can. I think that, you know, that may have been a miscalculation on somebody's part, that, you know, that they ever allowed the internet to happen. You know, Jay Rockefeller said as much. He said, you know, sometime back, there's an audio clip of him saying, well, you know, maybe we would have been better off not having the internet at all, you know. And but in any case, Ian had sent me this article. It's on CNET. And you know, I'm finding it. I guess it made a big news today. bill would give president emergency control of internet, whatever that means. Internet companies and civil liberties groups were alarmed this spring when a U.S. Senate bill proposed handing the White House the power to disconnect private sector computers from the internet. They're not much happier about a revised version that aides to Senator Jay Rockefeller, a West Virginia Democrat, have spent months drafting behind closed doors. CNET News has obtained a copy of the 55-page draft of S-773, which still appears to permit the president to seize temporary control of private sector networks during a so-called cybersecurity emergency. The new version would allow the president to, quote, declare a cybersecurity emergency relating to non-governmental computer networks and do what's necessary to respond to the threat. Other sections of the proposal include a federal certification program for cybersecurity professionals and a requirement that certain computer systems and networks in the private sector be managed by people who have been awarded that license. I think the redraft, while improved, remains troubling due to its vagueness, said Larry Clinton, president of the Internet Security Alliance, which counts representatives of Verizon, VeriSign, Nortel, and Carnegie Mellon University on its board. It is unclear what authority Senator Rockefeller thinks is necessary over the private sector. Unless this is clarified, we cannot properly analyze, let alone support the bill. Representatives of other large internet and telecommunications companies expressed concerns about the bill in a teleconference with Rockefeller's aides this week, but were not immediately available for interview on Thursday. A spokesman for Rockefeller also declined to comment on the record Thursday, saying that many people were unavailable because of the summer recess. A Senate source familiar with the bill compared the president's power to take control of portions of the internet to what President Bush did when grounding all aircraft on September 11, 2001. The source said that one primary concern was the electrical grid and what would happen if it were attacked from a broadband connection. When Rockefeller, the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, said Olympia Snow, Republican Maine, introduced the original bill in April, they claimed it was vital to protect national cybersecurity. We must protect our critical infrastructure at all costs, from our water to our electricity to banking, traffic lights, and electronic health records, Rockefeller said. The Rockefeller proposal plays out against a broader concern in Washington, D.C., about the government's role in cybersecurity. In May, President Obama acknowledged that the government is not as prepared as it should be to respond to disruptions and announced that a new cybersecurity coordinator position would be created inside the White House staff. 3 months later, that post remains empty. One top cybersecurity aide has quit, and some wags have begun to wonder why a government that receives failing marks on cybersecurity should be trusted to instruct the private sector what to do. Rockefeller's revised legislation seeks to reshuffle the way the federal government addresses the topic. It requires a cybersecurity workforce plan from every federal agency, a dashboard pilot project, measurements of hiring effectiveness, and the implementation of a comprehensive national cybersecurity strategy in 6 months, even though its mandatory legal review will take a year to complete. The privacy implications of sweeping changes implemented before the legal review is finished, worry Lee Tien, a senior staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco. As soon as you're saying that the federal government is going to be exercising this kind of power over private networks, it's going to be a really big issue, he says. Probably the most controversial language begins in Section 201, which permits the president to direct the national response to the cyber threat, if necessary, for the national defense and security, while the White House is supposed to engage in periodic mapping of private networks deemed to be critical, and those companies shall share requested information with the federal government. Cyber is defined as anything that having to do with the internet, telecommunications, computers, or computer networks. The language has changed, but it doesn't contain any real additional limits, TN says. It simply switches the more direct and obvious language they had originally. To the more ambiguous version. The designation of what is critical infrastructure system or network, as far as I can tell, has no specific process. There's no provision for any administrative process or review. That's where the problems seem to start. And then you have the amorphous powers that go along with it. Translation: if your company is deemed quote-unquote critical, a new set of regulations kick in involving who you can hire, what information you must disclose, and when the government would exercise control over your computers or network. The Internet Security Alliance's Clinton adds that his group is supportive of increased federal involvement to enhance cybersecurity, but we believe that the wrong approach as embodied in this bill as introduced will be counterproductive both from a national economic and national security perspective. Then it says update at 3:14 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I just talked to Jenna Longo, Deputy Communication Director for Senate Commerce Committee. On the phone, she sent me email with this statement: the President of the United States has always had the constitutional authority and duty to protect the American people and direct the national response to any emergency that threatens the security and safety of the United States. The Rockefeller Snow cybersecurity bill makes it clear that the President's authority includes securing our national cyber infrastructure from attack. The section of the bill that addresses this issue applies specifically to the national response to a severe attack or natural disaster. This particular legislative language is based on long-standing statutory authorities for wartime use of communications networks. To be very clear, the Rockefeller Snow bill will not empower a government shutdown or takeover of the internet, and any suggestion otherwise is misleading and false. The purpose of this language is to clarify how the President directs the public-private response to a crisis, secure our economy, and safeguard our financial networks, protect the American people, their privacy and civil liberties, and coordinate the government's response. So, I don't know. It seems pretty obvious to me that they're saying, well, we want to protect the power grid, or we want to protect this or protect that. Well, what the hell is the power grid doing on the internet? You know, why are these things on the internet? And then they mentioned medical records. Well, why are those on the internet? I thought those were supposed to be protected anyway. And then they want, you know, the other thing that's ridiculous is that large companies, the government can, you know, the way she just explained it in this article, if you're a large company, the government can just come along and say, well, hey, you have to share your information with us. You know, we decided that you have a big enough network. Let's say it's Walmart. Well, then the federal government could just come along and say, hey, Walmart, you have to share your information with us. You know, and is that going to include, what's that going to include? Is it also going to include access to, you know, credit card records and God knows what else? You know, it's ridiculous. You know, and then let's say that there's some kind of, you know, you have some sort of an emergency, or the, you know, some, you know, like Obama declares some sort of an emergency, and he says, oh, well, we got to turn the internet off. You know, so it's, they're going, they don't like, you know, I mean, you know, the way they got it worded, it's all for security and safety and blah, blah, blah. But it's really about, they would like to be able to just turn it off. There's too much free speech. They don't want to be criticized. You know, by the way, everything is moving towards the internet. If they really turned the internet off, it would be like switching the economy off. I had this other really interesting article. AP sources, DirecTV, TBS, TNT to put shows online. DirecTV Group Incorporated is in talks with TBS and TNT cable networks to offer their shows online, according to two people familiar with the discussions. If a deal is reached, DirecTV subscribers would be able to watch shows from those cable networks on the internet, the people said, on a condition of anonymity, because the talks are still ongoing. DirecTV, the nation's largest satellite TV operator, previously said it was considering such deals but did not specify the networks. So that's kind of interesting. And I think that's probably where it's all going to go. I'm on Dish Network, and you know, and this doesn't mention Dish Network, but let's say I'm subscribed to Dish Network. Well, you know, why can't I just if I'm on the internet and I've got a decent internet connection, why can't I just watch my direct or my Dish Network subscription right on the internet? Because, you know, a lot of the shows are already available, you know, through Hulu, and, you know, you go to CBS and NBC and ABC, and a lot of those shows are available already, so why can't I just watch my satellite subscription on there? And if you've got let's say you've got a cable subscription, why can't you just, you know, log on to a web page and watch your cable subscription? You know, so I think that's actually that's probably where it's headed to. So let's see there were some other news stories here. James Murdoch, unchecked BBC expansion is quote unquote chilling. And this is from timesonline.co.uk. An out of control BBC and addiction to central planning by regulators are damaging democracy and media choice in Britain, James Murdoch said in Edinburgh last night. Giving the annual MacTaggart lecture to an audience of television executives, Mr. Murdoch, 36, the son of Rupert Murdoch, called for a dramatic reduction of the activities of the state in broadcasting, arguing that it effectively treated viewers like children. He contrasted the prevailing political attitude to mainstream broadcasting with the lightly regulated newspaper, film, or book industry where consumer choice predominates. Mr. Murdoch, chief executive of the European and Asian operations of News Corporation, parent company of The Times, said, "In a regulated world of public service broadcasting, the customer does not exist. He or she is a passive creature, a viewer in need of protection. In other words, in other parts of the media world, including pay television and newspapers, the customer is just that, someone whose very freedom to choose makes them important." He said that the chilling expansionism of the BBC meant that commercial rivals and consumer choice were struggling. In particular, the expansion of state-sponsored journalism in the form of the BBC News Online was a threat to plurality and independence of news provision, which are so important to our democracy. And Mr. Murdoch criticized Radio 2's effort to woo younger listeners by hiring presenters such as Jonathan Ross on salaries no commercial competitor could afford. No doubt the BBC celebrates the fact that it now has well over half of all radio listening, but the consequent impoverishment of the once successful commercial sector is a testament to the corporation's inability to distinguish between what is good for it and what is good for the country. Mr. Murdoch's lecture comes 20 years after his father, the chief executive of News Corporation, made a wide-ranging attack on the BBC and the British television establishment. However, this speech fell short of calling for specific cutbacks on the BBC and other changes in broadcasting policy. so as to concentrate on first principles. He said the consensus appears to be that the Cretinism, the belief in a managed process with an omniscient authority, is the only way to achieve successful outcomes. There is general agreement that the natural operation of the market is inadequate and that a better outcome can be achieved through the wisdom and activity of governments and regulators. This creationist approach is similar to the industrial planning, which went out of fashion in other sectors in the 1970s. It failed then, it's failing now. Defending the BBC, Sir Michael Lyons, the chairman of the BBC Trust, said that its license fee funding system meant that it has no choice but to serve all audiences, but that it doesn't mean that it can or should seek to squeeze out other providers. He added, "We have to be careful not to reduce the whole of broadcasting to some simple economic transactions. The BBC's public purposes stress the importance of the well-tested principles of educating and informing and an impartial contribution to debate." Ofcom, the communications regulator, was criticized by Mr. Murdoch for intervening with relish whenever it had the opportunity in producing adjudications on what broadcasters can and cannot say, amounting to roughly half a million words long. In activities, its activities included the no doubt vital guide on how to download, which teenagers across the land could barely have survived without. He stopped short of calling for the abolition of Ofcom, but said its activities needed to be reduced to contemplate intervention only on the evidence of actual and serious harm to the interests of consumers. Mr. Murdoch, who is also the chief executive of BSkyB, 39.1% owned by News Corporation, made clear that he believed that broadcasters such as Sky should be freed from the long-standing requirement to produce impartial news. He argued that the mere selection of stories and their place in the running order is itself a process full of unacknowledged partiality. The impartiality rule was an impingement on the freedom of speech. Ofcom said that it welcomed Mr. Murdoch's contribution. It was committed to its duty to protect consumers and viewers' interests and to promote competition and innovation based on thorough and objective evidence and analysis. Now, one thing I'll say about the BBC, there's one, you know, I like listening to some BBC programming, and there's one of the podcasts, because the BBC's got a bunch of audio podcasts now. They have had for a couple, 3 years. And one of them is, it's just excellent. It's called Peter Day's World of Business. And they put that out, currently they're putting that out once a week. And that is, you know, usually, almost always, is excellent. Now, there's been a time or two where, you know, he's had some, you know, it's like a 30-minute program, and there's been like one time, I think, where it was boring and I ended up turning it off and skipping to the next podcast. But generally, his podcasts, you know, his shows are great. You know, it's Peter Day, just type in Peter Day, you know, and you can, you know, in iTunes or you can look for it on the BBC website. But Peter Day's World of Business, good stuff. So, but I don't know, you know, they've got a bunch of other stuff too, but I don't know too much about it, but it's, you know, I just thought that was interesting. Let's see here. Inflation. This is from FT.com, the Financial Times. Why is it that investors react to so-called headline numbers is one of the many mysteries of finance. From company results to retail sales figures, the truth hidden in the detail is often ignored. The public care even less for subtleties, With inflation, for example, efforts are made to present the data in a variety of different ways by stripping out volatile components such as food and energy prices. However, it is the headline numbers that always make the news, and because headline inflation affects expectations, a closed eye should be kept on the last few months of the year, of this year. Year-on-year comparisons will be strongly affected by the plunge in energy prices and the tail end of last year. In the U.S., for example, the seasonally adjusted consumer price index fell 2.4% in July. Other things being equal and adjusting for the small changes of the weighting and the energy component in the index, headline inflation will start to rise on a year-to-year basis in November and then peak at 1.6% in January. So they're just kind of talking about headlines. Let's see. I'm not going to read this whole story, but there was this guy that was accused in a sex case in Florida, and he was found not guilty. You know, this case drug on for like 5 years, and he was found not guilty. But in the meantime, before they read the verdict, he killed himself. So accused in sex case, not guilty, kills self. But he killed himself before he found out that he was going to be not guilty. Let's see here. Georgia's bottom line, and this is from abcnews.com. They're George Stephanopoulos. Death panels in the politics of death. Mike Huckabee tossed a hand grenade into the debate over who's politicizing Ted Kennedy's death Thursday morning when he told his radio audience that under Obamacare, Kennedy would be told to go home and take a pain pill and die. So that's kind of interesting. It's probably true. If Kennedy would have been under the Obamacare, because of course he wouldn't. He was a senator. He's part of the elite. Oops, Charlie forgot this $1 million house. And Scott talking about Charlie Rangel. And this is from thenewyorkpost.com. Washington, Representative Charlie Rangel failed to report as much as $1.3 million in outside income, including up to $1 million for Harlem building sale on final disclosure forms he filed between 2002 and 2006, according to newly amended records. The documents also show that the embattled chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, who is being probed by the House Ethics Committee, failed to reveal a staggering $3 million in various business transactions over the same period. This week, Rangel filed drastically revised financial disclosure forms reflecting new, higher amounts of outside income and numerous additional business details that had not been reported when the reports were originally filed. In 2002, for instance, Rangel reported earning between $4,000 and $10,000 in outside earnings on top of his $158,100 congressional salary. But the amended filings show that after the sale of a property on West 132nd Street, his outside income that year was somewhere between $118,000 and $1.04 million. So that's typical. I mean, you know, he's on the, you know, these people, congressmen, you know, and he's on the Ways and Means Committee, and yet when he files his own taxes, I forgot, you know. Here's another article about it. The absent-minded chairman. When normal people happen to quote-unquote find their own money, it might mean a 20 left in a winter coat or discovering change beneath the sofa cushions. But if you're Charlie Rangel, it means doubling your net worth. Earlier this month, the chairman of the Tax Writing Ways and Means Committee amended, quote-unquote, his 2007 financial disclosure form to the tune of more than $500,000 in previously unreported assets and income. That number may be as high as $780,000 because the Congress's ethics rules only require the members to report their finances within broad ranges. This voyage of personal finance discovery brings Mr. Rangel's net worth for 2007 to somewhere between $1.028 million and $2.495 million, while his previous statements came in at $516,015, and $1.316 million. So, you know, this goes on. You know, how, you know, people seem to, you know, put up with it. And of course, he's a congressman from New York, and they just keep voting him in. People end up with the government that they deserve. Let's see what else there was. That's it. So, I don't know. It's crazy. Crazy world we live in. But it, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know what's going to happen with the country, because we've got, you know, on the one hand, we've got communists running the government at this point. They call themselves Democrats, they're communists. Plain and simple. And they're trying to do everything that they possibly can, since they are communists. They're going to do what communists do. You know, they can't stop themselves. They're going to try to grab whatever they possibly can. They want to take control. They want to take control of as many people's lives as possible. They want, you know, that's what they want. They want control. They want the government to be God, and they want everyone's allegiance to be forced. Of course, you know, part of the people, you know, let's say half of the people, or almost half of the people, already believe the government's God, or they're malleable enough, they're suggestible enough to where they can just, you know, they can just be, you know, government's God, and then they just, you know, they think the government's God. You know, there's a lot of people that can easily just kind of be programmed to behave a certain way. Kind of mindlessly, mechanically behave and think in a certain manner. But the problem is that, you know, there's a lot of people that are waking up now, but, you know, so many of us have just kind of laid back, and we've, you know, things have been sliding, they've been on a long slide for a long time, and we've kind of let it go and let it go and let it go. But then we get to the point where we can't let it go anymore, but we've let it get too far out of control. And that's why wars happen, is because people end up allowing things to get so far out of control that the only, you know, that it ends up with violence. You know, it ends up requiring some kind of violence to correct it, to correct the problem. And I'm afraid that we're at that point. You know, so in the meantime, you know, here's the government printing all this money, you know, and at the same time, you know, more and more unemployment, economy's going down the toilet. And then the government, you know, you've got communists basically in the government that want, you know, to push through health or, you know, this health bill, but it's really about control. They don't give a crap about your health. They just want control. It's just a way of gaining control over your life. Get control over as much of your life as possible. You'll worship at the feet of Caesar. But there are, you know, people are kind of coming back to life. They're kind of coming awake, and they're standing up. But in the meantime, you've got these other people that are still trying to grab. They're trying to seize as much control and as much power as they possibly can. And the other part of that, and you know, they're trying. They're deliberately destroying the economy. They're happy about the high unemployment numbers. I don't care what they say. They're happy about it. It's chaos. You know, it's like they said, you know, or the one guy in the Obama administration said, you know, or I think it was, which one was it? Rahm Emanuel. Never let a good crisis go to waste. You can get things done in a crisis that people wouldn't ordinarily go for. So, you know, create a bigger and bigger crisis. And then that way that people will finally give up and say, oh, well, we'll just give control to the government and they can fix it. And then you simply end up enslaved. We had to fight a civil war over slavery. We ended up fighting a bloody civil war over the slavery problem. But what's going on now, we've got people that want to enslave the entire population. It's just, you know, still slavery. And I'm afraid we're going to end up with another civil war. And that civil war could end up being just as bloody as the civil war that was fought over slavery. You know, so it's, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, so far there's not really been any violence, but you know, there's been a lot of rowdy debate. A few people have gotten beat up, but you know, that's mostly, you know, the Obama, you know, that happened in St. Louis. You know, the Obama had the Service Employees International Union, SEIO, you know, this union thug beat this black guy up that was selling, you know, he was at one of those town hall meetings, you know, selling Don't Tread on Me pins and what have you, and American flags, you know, and so that guy got beat up and got sent to the hospital. You know, and there's been a few incidents, I think, like that, but, you know, there hasn't been any real violence. But if they keep on, I'm afraid that it will, sooner or later, there's going to be some real violence. Possibly. But, you know, on the other hand, people like, you know, communists like Obama, and the Democrats that are in Congress are necessary. They're necessary evil, because if we sort of fall down on our job and don't, you know, we kind of let these people just let it go and let it go and let it go, and we don't take control of the government, you know, because we have a responsibility too as citizens in a free country. We have a responsibility to police our own government. And if we don't, then we're going to end up with the wrong people in charge. It's very simple. If you keep going along to get along, sooner or later, you're going to find yourself completely powerless. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. It's really going to be interesting to see how it, you know, to see how it ends up either getting resolved or it doesn't get resolved. But these people are going to try to grab as much power and as much control over people's lives as they possibly can. And it's not about health care. It's not about, you know, keeping you secure, because it's not. It's just a smokescreen. And if people simply react to words, you know, and try to argue over the words, you're wasting your time with these, you know, we cannot compromise with these people. We shouldn't be passing any kind of health bill at all with the current people that are in Congress and the current president. We can't. At this point, we just have to stop them. Do whatever we can to stop the Congress from doing anything, because that's the Congress is where they have a lot of power as far as legislative power, and that needs to just, you know, they just need to put a stop to that. We need to put a stop to the Congress, and then in 2010 sweep out as many people as possible. Any incumbents need to be gotten rid of, you know, because that's, you know, because quite frankly, even on the Republican side, there are some people that have been in power for far too long, and they're compromised as well. So we need as many new people, new faces in the government as we can possibly get. Get rid of anybody that's an incumbent, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. You know, and then the other, you know, if we can do that, then that kind of puts a stop legislatively, that puts a stop. And then, you know, and then I don't know what's going to happen with the Obama administration, if it's just going to end up being a lame duck, or if the Congress had any guts, they would impeach him and get him out, you know, and you know, because he's clearly overstepped his bounds. There's no question about that. But at least the very best thing that could happen would be, at this point, no legislation gets passed, and you know, everything just gets completely stalled, and then until the 2010 election, and then we, you know, that all those people get swept out, as many people as possible get swept out of office and new people in, and then, and even then, hopefully nothing gets passed, you know, because we're really, I don't know, they always want to do this, and they do that, and they want to do this, and tinker with that, and, you know, and sometimes people will say, well, we want to hear constructive stuff, we don't want to hear no, we want to, well, what can we do? Well, I'm afraid we can't really do anything, other than just, you know, the best thing that we can do is, and of course the government doesn't do it, but the best thing that we can possibly do is to encourage people to be as independent as possible. Encourage people to be, you know, self-supporting, independent, so on and so forth. But of course, government doesn't do that, because government likes to create dependence. The nature, you know, it's the very nature of government ends up kind of creating dependency. And then you get government programs, and all of these people want to feel like they have something to do, you know, so job security. So they encourage people to be dependent and weak. And of course, it ends up ultimately kind of being, you know, as far as the society goes, it ends up kind of being suicidal. Because eventually the whole thing falls apart of its own weight. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next, I don't know, over the next year, in particular. You know, and then I don't know. We've still got more than 3 years to go with the Obama administration, and But as I say, in particular, the next year is going to be extremely interesting to see what, you know, see kind of how it plays out. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off, get headed towards bed, and maybe, I don't know if they'll send a, I'm assuming they're going to be sending another load sometime in the morning, maybe, and if they don't, then I'm going to have to get the, I think there's a Petro truck stop somewhere nearby here, maybe a couple exits down on the New Jersey Turnpike, and so if they don't send another load, then, you know, tomorrow, then I'll go down there and get the trailer washed out, and then at least, you know, and then I'll be able to hang out at the truck stop. But I kind of expect they'll be sending another load. But again, we'll just have to wait and see. So anyway, hope everyone has a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.